Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Mind Movement Health podcast. This week, we're continuing our Pelvic Floor Awareness Month with my amazing guest, Kathy Watson. Now, Kathy is a pelvic floor physiotherapist living and working in Vernon, BC, Canada. She's the owner and operator of Kathy Watson Physiotherapy. Kathy treats men and women with bladder and bowel incontinence, weakness, prolapse, pelvic pain, and diastasis recti with the help of real-time ultrasound, external biofeedback, and exercise integration. Kathy herself was certified many years ago as a group fitness teacher and personal trainer, and she also transitioned and became a certified Pilates teacher through Stop Pilates. So she is all about Pilates, integration of movement, and really good activation of pelvic floor muscles. So I am super excited to have Kathy on the show today. We're going to be diving into prolapse, pelvic pain, weakness, incontinence, diastasis recti, and so much more. So let's listen in and hear what Kathy can share with us. Hi, I'm Kate Boyle, and welcome to the Mind Movement Health podcast. Each week, I'll be bringing you health information from diet and lifestyle to movement and nutrition. My aim is to bring you bite-sized pieces of information that you can instigate into your everyday life to change your health. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Mind Movement Health podcast. I'm your host, Kate Boyle, and today we are very lucky because I have an amazing guest with me, pelvic floor physio Kathy Watson. So welcome to the show, Kathy. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Thanks, Kate. I'm really excited to be here.
Amazing. Now, this month of the podcast, we are chatting all about pelvic floor health, which is why I'm so excited to have you on today. It is a very prevalent thing, pelvic floor issues, especially amongst women. So that's why I wanted to bring you on the show, I guess, to give listeners some more information about their pelvic floors and the issues that can come up. So can you, before we sort of dive into all the different topics, can you just share with listeners a little bit about you and what you do?
Sure. So my name's Kathy Watson. I'm a registered physiotherapist, and I've been doing that for probably almost 20 years. And then probably for the last 7 or 8, I've delved right into pelvic health, pretty much 100%. Before that, it was more of a Pilates physiotherapy-based practice. And although I still use that now, I just went more and more into pelvic health. So I treat men, women, and kids with issues around incontinence, prolapse, pelvic pain. And so all my coursework and everything is on GI tracts and diastasis and everything pelvic floor, bowel, bladder. My big thing is just try not to take a course this summer, because I just want to try to not take a course. Like, there's so many interesting courses out there. You could just take courses constantly, you know. There's always more to learn, and then you can always give better, you know, better treatment back to your clients. But I'm really going to try to stay, you know, strict with this. I'm going to make it all the way to September.
I'm the same. I'm always booking in for a course and then going, oh, I've overcommitted. How am I fitting this all in? But it's I'm the same as you. It's so great to learn so much, and then you can pass it on to your patients and clients. So yeah, I totally understand that.
Yeah, good.
Now, did you, you know, what made you sort of decide to specialize into this area? Was there something that, you know, was it your own personal journey, or did you just sort of see more and more clients coming into your practice with these sorts of issues?
Yeah, it was more about my clients, because part of my practice was Pilates based, and Pilates is, you know, largely about the core. So I would have clients maybe bring things up, like they were leaking when they were running, or maybe they were having pain when they were having intercourse. And so I would do everything externally that I could do and wasn't getting anywhere with that. So I would refer them to a pelvic health physiotherapist. And then one day I kind of thought, maybe I should check this out. Maybe this is a part of, you know, something that I'm really missing. So I took the first course, and that was it. From the first course on, it was just so interesting. It's a really interesting field. And you just realize how many people have issues. all across the ages, you know, all over the world, for different reasons. That was what got me started. And the more I looked into it, what kind of tweaked me again was the lack of information that's out there, even more so then, because I feel like, I guess, because I'm in the pelvic floor world now, I feel like, wow, there's so much information out there. But, you know, probably for the average person who's not immersed in that world, they're not seeing all that information. And a lot of the information is poor. It's not good information. And it's myths. So, you know, that just kind of makes you want to invest more into something like that. I know for me that, you know, knowledge is power. So the more knowledge you have, you can just participate more in your own healthcare. So yeah. That kind of really kind of started driving me more and more into it.
Yeah. Well, I'm, as you know, a Pilates instructor. I have my own studio. So yeah. I refer clients to pelvic floor physios a lot. But what I have found over the years is that there is a real resistance to it, you know, males and females, but generally, you know, especially I work a lot with females, that probably comes up a lot more talking about pelvic floor. And there is this resistance like, oh, it's only a little bit of leakage. It's not a big deal. I don't need to go see someone. I don't need anybody looking down there. There's that sort of, you know, I guess stigmas and things that come with it too. So I do find, as someone that often refers people to pelvic floor physios, it takes me a few goes of talking to them before they actually go, oh yeah, maybe I do need to see somebody. So, you know, I can definitely relate to some of that with clients.
Yeah. Now, I believe that, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a shame because, you know, this whole month and we're doing four different podcasts on pelvic floor, essentially, and each within which one I've said, if you are having issues, visit a pelvic floor physio because it is very individual, as you would definitely testament to.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, anybody's going to be really excited. It's like, I want somebody to, you know, look at my vagina or my rectum or whatever, find out what's going on. It's not, you know, it's not something that's going to bring people in really easily. And even when you think how many like moms, they've had kids and they still don't want that. So people who, you know, haven't had kids or men, it makes it even more difficult. The one option though, is sometimes I've had the odd person that has come as a client and they didn't know there was an internal part of the assessment. They weren't told, maybe they didn't look on the website and read, they just weren't really too sure what to expect. So as soon as I start talking about the internal part of the assessment, you can see their eyes getting really, really big. And it's like, oh, you didn't know, did you? So we talk about it. I've only had probably a couple of people feel like, ooh, I don't know about this. And so I've got a real-time ultrasound machine, like, you know, some physios do. And that can be a great option. So it's great for everybody, but it's great for kids. You don't have to do internal. And it's great for somebody who might be a little nervous at first. You can still get a great look at the bladder. And if you do a perineal scan, you can see the muscles that way as well. So it's another option.
Yeah, I've used the pelvic floor ultrasound one of the workshops. I did a pelvic floor workshop and it was really interesting because it was a whole bunch of Pilates instructors using it, and it was very surprising to see that you assume that as a Pilates instructor your pelvic floor is going to be amazing, and for most of the instructors when they were just stable it was, but as soon as they started to add in any movement it was very interesting to see what happened. So even when you think your pelvic floor is very strong, there's always some improvement you can probably work on.
Absolutely.
Now, can you dive into just a little bit about what our pelvic floor is and why it is so important?
Right. Yeah. So it's this, part of us inside that we don't think about. If something isn't going in there or something isn't coming out of there, we don't really think about it too much. But I think it's important for us to think about it more. And so the pelvic floor, there's, you know, a few different layers of muscles inside, and they run basically between, you know, pubic bone and tailbone lengthwise, and then side to side. Some people call it between the sit bones, some people like to say between the hip bones, and it's like that little basket of muscles that do all sorts of things to help support us. So when we think about their functions, we think about support. So those muscles are in there to help support our pelvic organs, so uterus, bladder, rectum. They give us stability. So where they attach, you know, on the inside of the coccyx, on the tailbone, on the sides of the hips. So they give us support through our hips. They give us support at our SI joints, at our pubic symphysis. So they're doing lots of good support. They're part of our core. So they're very important in giving us that stabilizing function. They help us open and close sphincters. So when we want to, you know, pass urine or not, we want to keep some gas in, which of course we shouldn't be doing, but sometimes it's more appropriate to not pass gas in public. So we want to be able to work those sphincters and have good control over them. They act as a bit of a sump pump in pumping blood back up to the heart. And they're useful for, say, sexual gratification. So those muscles, if they're pumping all the time, they're contracting, they're releasing, and that's pressing on all those great blood vessels and nerves. So that good muscle action can help as well for sexual gratification.
Yeah.
So they do a lot. So when you think about when you were talking earlier about how if somebody just leaks a little bit, not a big deal, but I kind of think it's not like, you know, it's not to scare people and say, oh my God, this is, you know, horrible, but it's a small, minor problem that's easier. Little problems are always easier to fix than bigger problems. And if all those pelvic floor muscles are supposed to do all those other functions, if they're already weakening enough that they can't close off at a sphincter to make sure that we don't pee when we don't want to, they might not be supporting us as well as we need them to. They might not be supporting our joints as well. They might not be supporting our organs as well. So it's not just a little bit of leakage. We want to think about pelvic floor as all those functions that they do. It's important to, you know, stay on top of.
Yeah. And I love that you highlighted that, because I think most people think, oh, the pelvic floor muscles, do you know what I mean? Yeah, they just hold the urine up and that's pretty much it. But yeah, they are, you know, important for a number of different things, and stability being a big one too. What would you say generally contributes to a weakened pelvic floor?
So there's, and for women, there's two big times in our lives that the pelvic floor can be impacted. And one, of course, is a pregnancy. And the second one is in menopause. So all those hormonal changes and body changes, the pelvic floor can be impacted that way. And it can lead to a weakened pelvic floor. So as far as pregnancy goes, even if it doesn't have to be a vaginal delivery, of course, that would be probably a biggest risk factor for having pelvic floor issues. But even a C-section, because it's just the sheer weight on top of the pelvic floor and the large uterus, so that can impact pelvic floor. During menopause, hormone changes, tissues are changing, thinning, that muscle bulk isn't there enough. So again, our pelvic floors can be impacted then. But there's also other reasons pelvic floor can be impacted, but in different ways. So for, say, prolapses and things, they could be chronic coughing if somebody smokes or has some sort of pathology where they might have a chronic cough, or constipation. That's like a big, huge one. So if somebody's coming in for pelvic floor help, say they have weakened pelvic floor muscles, if they also have constipation, that's the first thing we actually have to help them with, because if they are trying to strengthen their pelvic floor muscles and pull up and in, but they are pushing and straining and pushing out and down a lot, it's not going to be very useful. They won't be as successful. So we definitely need to get on top of the constipation. That's like a much more of a problem than I think people realize, how it impacts our bodies.
Yeah, well, I know this is going to air in a couple of weeks, this podcast, and the podcast before this one, because I'm a nutritionist as well. So I talk about making sure that you have a high fiber diet, because constipation is a big thing that contributes to pelvic floor. So I love that you've brought that up, because again, I think it's another one of those things that people think it's a separate issue. But just taking that pressure off the pelvic floor from the constipation can be a big thing. And I also discuss exercise as well, because as I've shared in one of the other episodes, I grew up as a young dancer. So I suffered a lot from stress incontinence when I was a young dancer, but not even realizing what it was till, you know, much later on. Wow. Not visiting anybody, my mum not knowing that, do you know what I mean? She noticed, she used to wash my underwear and just sort of think it was just part of it, but it's not till, you know, I was a bit older. So there are obviously other factors that can affect your pelvic floor that I think people probably aren't aware of as well.
Yeah. We think about, I think it's the Olympic trampolinists that are kind of at the top of the, you know, stress urinary incontinence risk. So yeah, any kind of impact like that to the pelvic floor. I sometimes wonder if we take the same groups, went backwards, and had they had pelvic floor training and how to engage core properly and all that stuff in the beginning, would they still have the same issues? You know, is it just so much impact that there's no way the pelvic floor is not going to have a problem? Or could that have helped going forward?
I honestly believed if I'd had some, you know, training in the pelvic floor, it would have helped, because naturally what my body did as I got stronger is I just clenched and held my pelvic floor. So I went from a very weak pelvic floor to an overly strong pelvic floor. Yeah. And then that affected me during my delivery and all the rest of it with my kids. So I had a lot of issues with that too. So I honestly believe that it would have helped me. I mean, it's probably different for everybody, but sometimes, you know, if you are an Olympic trampolinist and you're doing hours a day on the trampoline, there might not be anything you can do to stop that. But yes, I think, you know, having that early awareness and information about your pelvic floor could be a good thing. And, you know, maybe there isn't enough of that sort of being spoken about to younger girls too.
Yeah, I don't think there is. I mean, hopefully that will continue to change. You know, it's just very slow. But I think even in younger girls need to have that information earlier on, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And if somebody is suffering from a weakened pelvic floor, what can they do to start to strengthen the muscles, or what are the first steps that they should be looking to do?
Yeah. So if it's a weakened pelvic floor, so they come in for assessment and then we assess, and then yes, we know it's actually weakened. It's not overly tight, because that would be a completely different treatment strategy, as you're probably aware. So then we want to strengthen those muscles. But we want to make sure they can move both ways. So it's all about motor control. So it's not always just strengthening. We want to make sure they can release them as well. So just like with any muscle in our body, we want to make sure it can move both ways, contract and release. So Kegels, most people know of the pelvic floor strengthening exercises, Kegels. They are key to that, I think. They need to be learned. Sometimes if I am assessing somebody and I'll ask them to, okay, now do your Kegel, what you would do for Kegel. And if it's not a mindful Kegel, or they're not picturing something, then it'll just be a kind of a so-so squeeze. So then I'll start giving them some cues and explaining how important it is for the nervous system to be involved. So if we involve our brain more, do it more mindfully, we will get more out of it. So I'll give them some different cues and I always get a better contraction. So that would be a definite start. There are obviously different ways to progress Kegels. We want to do them with the slow twitch fibers, more of those endurance fibers. Those would be the holds. And then we definitely want to do some fast ones, because those are the fast twitch muscle fibers that need to respond to fast movements, like a sneeze or your trip off a curb and you catch yourself. You want to make sure that your pelvic floor can react quickly so you don't leak. And then, of course, positional changes. So we might start laying down where it's comfortable and you don't have to focus on too many other things. Sitting would be a progression. And then, of course, standing. I like to always integrate things. So once somebody knows how to, you know, use their pelvic floor, we want to integrate it. I always go over things like, you know, what the deep core is with the pelvic floor, transverse abs, diaphragm, and then those deep multifidi, the deep back muscles. I show them pictures and then how those muscles all work together, just so that they understand how important it is that we want to make sure that those muscles are moving in the proper directions like they should be. So I'll tend to blend transverse abs, the breathing, and pelvic floor all together, step by step. And as somebody's able to assimilate that information, because you probably, like being in Pilates, you probably see people initially too, that they're really, that's new information, or people breathing incorrectly and opposite even, you know, inhaling and the chest lifts and the belly goes in and then they exhale and everything just kind of dumps back down.
Yeah, you're speaking my language, like, yeah. You know, and a lot of the time we will just go back and just focus on basic breathing and just learning how to breathe first, and then we'll add in the layers of the pelvic floor and the transverse and sort of build on it from there. But I find breathing is a big one that, you know, a lot of clients come in, usually they're coming to me for some sort of rehab work, so they're already experiencing some sort of pain, there's tension within the body, and they generally are sort of clamping and either holding their breath or clamping down on it. So releasing some of that tension, I find great to start with whenever we're looking at movement. So I love that you've sort of brought up the diaphragm and that as well, because you're speaking what we do. So
it's so key.
Sure.
Yeah, reaching into now, that parasympathetic system a little bit more than sympathetic nervous system.
Exactly. And I talk a lot about that with my clients, with, you know, breathing in through the nose and trying to get to that rest and digest state. And we do a lot of that too. So I love that you share that. Now, when it comes to leakage and incontinence, we know it can progress in some women, you know, can, and men, you know, we can talk about men, but we're focusing on women today, can experience a prolapse. Now, can you explain, you know, what a prolapse is and what it might feel like? I know from my experience, I'll have a lot of clients that come in and they haven't seen a pelvic floor physio, and they're not sure if they actually have a prolapse, but they'll often say that they have a lot of pressure in the pelvic floor area, or they feel a dragging sensation. So can you just dive into, you know, what a prolapse is and that a little bit more?
Yeah, for sure. So prolapse, if we're talking about pelvic organ prolapse, then we're looking at either a uterine prolapse, where the uterus comes down a little lower than where it once sat. You know, we might be bumping into or feeling the cervix a little too early. We could have the bladder, a bladder prolapse or a cystocele. And so that will kind of, you'll feel that in the vaginal space a bit. You could bump into a bladder. A rectocele would be the rectum pushing into the posterior floor of the vagina. And so if I'm feeling for that, it's almost like a little speed bump you go over instead of nice and flat or dipping down. Or a rectal prolapse, where the rectum is coming right out of the anus or that sphincter. People describe them definitely fairly similarly, I suppose, where it's that pelvic heaviness. Sometimes they'll actually feel something in their underwear. They might feel like they have a tampon in, but they know they don't. So feelings like that for sure. It interrupts with, you know, sometimes bowel emptying. So that can feel uncomfortable. Some people do report pain. There can be friction and rubbing of the prolapse against other tissue. So that can be, it can start to become painful, but I would say most prolapses aren't painful per se. They're just uncomfortable because there's something there that you just feel all the time that shouldn't be there.
Yeah, essentially. Now, with, you know, these types of pelvic floor issues, whether or not it is incontinence or a prolapse and that, is there a kind of a general time frame when people do start rehabbing that they should start to see results, or is it just a very individual thing?
It's definitely, well, somewhat individual for sure, because I always think about, who do you have sitting in front of you? So is it the busy mom with 1, 2, 3 kids at home, possibly going to a job as well or not, lots of stuff going on? That person versus, say, somebody who's retired, you know, they got all the time they to themselves, you know, they're going to be able to spend more focused time versus somebody who just can't just think about themselves all the time. So that's a big factor right off the bat. I always try to tailor whoever is sitting in front of me, try to tailor their treatment to that. Like, what's realistic? Because, you know, I want them to be successful. I would say, on average, like with my practice, I see people probably for 3 to 6 sessions. So it's really education and exercise, making sure they understand how to integrate what we're doing. Pain can sometimes take a little bit longer. That could be closer to 6 sessions, sometimes longer. But generally, when you're teaching somebody, you know, how to either engage their muscles or how to release them, you're giving them lots of stuff to work on their own. And that's what we want them to understand and feel. And once they have that, then it's really just the work that they need to do within a progression. So I find With a nervous system involvement, that part of it, I recheck somebody within 2 weeks and I'll almost always see a change within that 2 weeks, and they will report a change. So it can be, it'll be small, but it'll be something maybe like if it was a leaking issue because of weakened muscles, they might, instead of every single sneeze they had and leaked, they maybe sneezed a few times and there wasn't a leak, or there was less leakage. They'll see little things like that. Or if it's tight muscles, they're working on their urge suppression. They're working on releasing those muscles. So they'll either feel less discomfort, if pain was an issue, or they'll work on less frequent bathroom breaks with the frequency, urgency, or overactive bladder that may oftentimes go hand in hand with tight muscles. So they'll see those little changes. And then what I'll generally see is when I reassess, the ability to feel them move those muscles better. So they'll have either a little bit more strength or they'll have a better ability to release the muscles if they're tight. So that little bit of change comes quickly and then it just builds.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, really positive that within a couple of weeks, you can start to see those changes, because when you start to see even a little change, that kind of motivates you to, you know, do it more or practice more or keep going. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's amazing. And thanks for sharing that, because I think that's a big thing. A lot of people are always like, well, how long is this going to take? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And we all want instant gratification, right? But
yeah,
in that couple of weeks, you get a little change that there's that momentum and that can fuel people to keep working on it.
Yeah, exactly. And you did touch it on pain, and we haven't really delved into that, but I know that can be, you know, a side effect of, you know, issues with pelvic floor and the pelvis. So can you explain a little bit maybe about, you know, do we get pain when our pelvic floor muscles tend to be weak, or is it more when they're overly strong, or can it present in both cases?
Yeah, I guess it can present in both cases. Probably the more common presentations are when the muscles are too tight. Some people refer to it as hypertonic. Just having that resting tone too tight, too on. You know, it's kind of like if you walked around all day with a bent elbow, like you're squeezing your bicep all day. There's way too much tone in there. Your resting tone is too high. When you release that, it's not going to feel very good. So those muscles inside, when they're tight like that, they're clamping down on all those nerves and blood vessels, so that flow isn't through there as nice. That can be really uncomfortable. And I always describe it to people that it's just like any other muscle in your body. You know, if you have super, super tight hip flexors, that can lead to back pain. You have tight hamstrings, that can lead to back pain. So it's kind of the same thing in that way. And then, of course, there's other different pathologies, like whether it's like a vaginismus or vestibulodynia, all those other pathologies. But if we take away, say, pathologies and we just think about tight muscles are generally going to be more the pain-producing ones.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's, you can share too, is this something that, you know, women may experience during pregnancy, post-pregnancy, just throughout their lives? Is there more pain that might come through during pregnancy as well?
So then there could be pelvic girdle pain, so more of an outside pain during pregnancy, where all those hormones are making things a little looser and the joints are moving too much. So pain, you could have pain with penetration. So if you're having sexual penetration, that can be painful if there's a prolapse in the way, or if it's just tight muscles. Because you think if you have a tight muscle in your body and you touch it, it's like, ooh, it kind of feels solid or steel-like or bruisey or achy. That can feel the same way with any kind of penetration. Are you wondering if there's more pain in a particular time of the lifespan?
Yeah, I guess I was just kind of, through the lifespan, you know, I know we're sort of saying that you get more pain when the muscles are tight, but if you've already got tight muscles and then you're pregnant, do you tend to get more pain then? Or is it going to be, yes, you had the difficult labor and then the recovery, maybe you had a difficult labor and you had some tearing and the muscles were already tight, so it's going to be even more painful post baby potentially?
Right. Yeah. So if there's tight muscles, say before, and you know, you always think about those last few weeks, you definitely want to work on opening those muscles up for during pregnancy, making sure they can move and accommodate baby coming out. But say they're tight, so they're not going to move as well. There could be more tearing because of that. They're not able to loosen up. And then afterwards, we have a little bit of scar tissue there, so that can also be painful. It's always nice to do some scar release, scar massage to loosen that area up. So that can be more painful. But it's not like somebody was overly tight before pregnancy, and then after delivery, they may go right back to being tight again because it's nervous system driven. It's not just had a baby come out of them. My God, I must be nice and flexible now. It doesn't always work that way. It can just go right back to the old pattern. And then you still have a tight pelvic floor that needs to be released.
Yeah. I think that's just something that, you know, a lot of people probably aren't aware of. I know before I went in to have my labor, I knew I had a strong pelvic floor because I'm a Pilates instructor and I'm an ex-dancer, but I didn't realize how difficult it was. And I had been doing all the things leading up to it. I'd been doing perineal massage, you know, I'd been stretching, you know, all those sorts of things. And I didn't realize just how hard it was for me to release the pelvic floor muscles until I was in labor. And so there might be other women out there, you know, I feel like everyone's always telling us that generally your pelvic floor is weaker, but there is quite a few women that may have that sort of overly strong pelvic floor and they're not even aware that that's an issue. So yeah, I just thought it would be interesting just to talk about that pain aspect of it too. So do you often see, you know, diastasis recti linked to pelvic floor issues as well, or is it a totally separate thing?
Yeah. I guess it can be, and sometimes it's not. So I check every one of my clients for diastasis or a DRA, just because I'm, you know, you're kind of tuned into it as a pelvic health physio. Maybe you do as well in Pilates, right? To make sure. So with women, if there's a pregnancy, we know that in the third trimester, every woman will have a diastasis. And so just that, but the linea alba is right in the center. It's that tissue, rectus abdominis head sit on either side of that. And during a diastasis, when the tissue cannot stretch anymore, the linea alba stretches and then the rectus abdominis heads go with it. And so if we feel in the center, right down the center line of our belly, we might feel a gapping. And if we ask them to do a certain movement like a head lift, then there might be some doming or coning happening during pregnancy. And then, so that's probably the biggest time we're going to see a diastasis. But, and so then of course there could be pelvic floor issues because it's pregnancy related, but men can have diastasis. I check all my male clients as well. And sometimes I'm still surprised at how often I'll find them. That can happen from obesity, just the same thing as pregnancy with that stretching. It could happen from chronic straining, and coughing, just that constant push of the, you know, too much intra-abdominal pressure pushing out there. So bodybuilders working on lots of mass, but not really maybe engaging the deep core as well, which is sometimes I know hard when you get into heavy, heavy lifting, totally different conversation, but so they can have a diastasis. So yeah, with women in pregnancy, they don't have to have one or the other.
I just think that's an interesting kind of topic because it is still correlated. So, you know, sometimes you may have, you know, a stronger pelvic floor, but you can still potentially have a diastasis as well. So coming back to how you engage the core potentially. I know quite a few of my clients, male and female, they're not aware that they even have a diastasis. It's only when, you know, we will start, you know, working through movements and I'll highlight certain things to them and then they're like, oh, that's what that is. Yeah, I was, you know, kind of wondering what that was when I bent forward and it, you know, domed up or whatever. So
it is all about how you engage. And so you see somebody maybe they're laying on their back, you ask them to lift their head, you see a diastasis, you feel it, there's a little doming there. And then you work with them for a while, you're trying to ask them to do a nice deep abdominal contraction with their transverse abs, pelvic floor, ask them to do the same motion, and there's no doming. So, which is great for them because they can see that right away and know they need to work on that. So it is all part of the core. So that transverse abs, pelvic floor, diaphragm, deep back muscles, all that corsetting around. So in that way, you definitely see them together.
Yeah, And with the diastasis, do you generally, if you know you are seeing somebody and they, you can see that they have one, are you tending to sort of really just start to strip it back and start to get back to engaging that deep core and teaching them that first before taking them into maybe some of those vulnerable movements where it tends to, you know, show up?
Yeah, absolutely. We start just with the basics again. So how to get that deep breath in, how to engage transverse abs, not all upper abs. They need to use their upper abs too, but I like to kind of focus on the lower fibers of the transverse abs first to kind of get that flattening almost. So teaching them how to engage that properly so that they're not, there's not all that pressure pushing through the belly and on top of the pelvic floor. And then using that with motions and using that with movements. And we would start really just with basic functional movements. So engaging before they pick up their baby, simple things like squats, just really kind of getting tuned into what's happening in that belly and how important it is to get that compression going around the belly so it doesn't dome.
Yeah. And
I mean, lots of people have diastasis years later.
Yeah. I see a lot of people come in the door that might have had their kids 10 years ago or whatever, and they're still presenting with that diastasis essentially. But if the diastasis goes unchecked, what's some of the things that may start to happen, or what might the person start to feel if it has been 10 years and, you know, they've had it the whole time?
I think some people could have, say, an undiagnosed back pain forever or a feeling of instability, but they didn't know it had to do with diastasis. And that can go on for years. They just, you know, they were, maybe somebody was helping them with everything else and they just didn't look there. So it can lead to a lack of stability. Those muscles just aren't able to get that tension and wrap around. So we kind of look at diastasis like functional or dysfunctional. And so the functional is they could have a big gap, several fingers wide, but if they can get tension generated, if the depth isn't too deep and they can get tension generated in that gap, they don't have any functional limitations, they don't have any pain, it's a functional DRA. And it's not functional if, no matter what, they just cannot get that tension generated in the gap, meaning those muscles just aren't able to connect and give them that little corseting feeling. There's other people that they have a diastasis, they've had it for decades, and it doesn't seem to be impacting them negatively. So whether their body just adapted around that, these are typically people who are also going to really use a lot of rectus abdominis, a lot of obliques. So they just accommodated, but it doesn't seem to be a factor for them. Decades later, there's a diastasis, they're still super active and doing all sorts of things. And they report absolutely no pain or instability with it.
It's fascinating how the body will adapt. Like if it can, it'll change patterns and adapt. And then in other areas, maybe if, you know, your glutes aren't as strong and you do have a diastasis, and then that's when you can potentially get back pain. But, you know, maybe if you're a runner and you have a diastasis, you can still function pretty well because, you know, you've got other global muscles that are functioning really well. So, yeah, I always find it very fascinating to see what the body will do.
Yeah. And do you want to change that? I always remember this one person that I assessed years ago. She was a big like marathon or big adventure race person. You looked at her, you thought, wow, is she ever fit? And then when she was laying on the plinth or the bed, and I asked her to do a simple straight leg raise, which is a real easy starter, like a check for stability around the pelvic area and core, et cetera. And it was this massive rotation. She could not do it. And I was like, okay, you're playing around with me, right? Come on, let's go here. No, that straight leg raise was horrible. I still remember it. And it was like, wow, look at what she's doing. She's doing crazy stuff, but her body has learned how to do it with some sort of really weird instability going on.
Yeah. And you raise a really good question. If what she loves to do is to, say, run marathons and she's currently injury free, is it worth changing the patterns? Because that's going to bring up a whole load of issues. So
exactly.
That's a really interesting question. And I guess very individual to the person and what they're trying to get out of coming to visit you know, somebody like yourself or like me doing Pilates and things like that. But yeah, it is an amazing thing to sometimes see what the body does and to see how functional people can be, because the body just adapts in other ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You always have to come back to, okay, I'd love to change this. I really want to help you with this, but no, that's not what they're there for. So, and there's no problems around it. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Just like sometimes if you look at certain running styles, you'll see somebody running down the road and it's like, oh my God, that's a horrible gait. But, you know, they don't seem to have any problems. So you wouldn't want to change that.
Yeah. I guess that's where if there's pain coming through or, you know, a postural change or something that's really starting to impact them, then that's when, you know, an intervention would be really helpful, but it may take a while and it may affect what they're currently doing and how they're currently functioning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, can you leave our listeners with one thing that they could do today that would help improve their pelvic health?
Well, I would say, don't ignore it, you know, try to integrate it. I feel like that's kind of a big missing piece that we don't seem to, you know, when we're in the gym, we should be still thinking about pelvic floors and Kegeling, and that's part of the core. So no matter what we're doing, you know, all through Pilates, yoga, doesn't matter what we're doing, somehow we have to learn how to integrate it. And so that's what I would say would be super important.
Ah, that's so good, because I always say to my clients, if there's one thing you can take away from Pilates is that core engagement, which is including the pelvic floor, and that you start to integrate that into your everyday life. So whether or not that's bending down to pick up your baby or, you know, leaning over to empty the dishwasher or picking and moving a piece of furniture, that, you know, that these sort of types of practice and awareness you really carry into everyday life. So I love that you shared that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's key. You know, I think that's kind of the difference between short-term change and long-term change. And if somebody just either has something done to them, say through their health care practitioner, they're not really participating in their health journey, or they just go to a class and it's great and they do all these great things, but then they leave and they don't do anything with it and don't incorporate it. I think that's key. You know, that's how we all continue to find long-term change, I think, with the integration.
Well, it's those small little things that you're doing all the time that add up over the period of time too. So, you know, really adding it in is going to sort of, you know, carry on and build on the changes more quickly too.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Kathy. Where can listeners sort of reach out? I know you have a pelvic floor health program and that too. So can you share a little bit about that and where listeners can reach you?
So my website, kathywatsonphysio.ca, I did create a couple of courses. One is more for fitness trainers, et cetera. And it was just an introduction kind of I want more pelvic floor in with fitness practitioners, because that's who everybody's working with. We want more and more people to have education about that so they can add it in with their program, just like you're doing with Pilates. I also have a program for people who are really trying hard to do their exercises, those, you know, pesky Kegels. It's really for weakened pelvic floor muscles, but they're so incredibly boring, they just aren't doing them. So I did create a program that's super easy. They can just, you know, click on the video, follow it through every day. It's for 8 weeks. And I also included a blended exercise videos there as well, so that they use their deep core separately, but they also blend it with simple things that they're probably already doing. There's lots of checklists and things that they can goal set. So that's all on my website. They can find those there for sure. And if they want to follow me on Facebook or Instagram, just find me, Kathy Watson Physiotherapy. That would be great.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing all that, because I know there are a lot of, you know, listeners that are out there and, you know, wanting to work on pelvic floor. So having, you know, all these resources and stuff available, and even online nowadays, you know, in the world we're now living in, having access to things online, I think are amazing and just so handy to have too. So thanks for coming on the show. It's been so great having you on, and I'm sure listeners have learned so much today. So thanks again.
Thanks, Kate. This was great. I'm so glad you're getting all this great information out there.
Thanks for listening into the podcast. Please hit subscribe to be updated for each time we release a new podcast.